Listener, a quick disclaimer. This episode features real audio from Jared Miller's now-deleted YouTube channel. The clips will play throughout the episode to give you a glimpse into a disturbed mind. With that said, I want to make it clear that nothing in this episode is a political statement. Today we explore the abyss. The episode will touch on politics. There's no escaping it in this case. The beliefs of these subjects were intertwined with their mass shooting. With that said, I will be keeping my own beliefs to myself and do my best to provide even coverage. I do not consider it my business to tell you yours. That's not what Obscura is about. I ask you to please enjoy the episode without expectations of having your beliefs reaffirmed in either direction. Now, let's get on with it.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
Part 1, you are introduced to our flea-bitten Romeo and Juliet, Amanda and Jared Miller. Jared, unwashed and dressed in flea market chic, told you all about his beliefs, about the New World Order. Amanda made a post on Facebook on how she daydreamed about the end of the world and wanted to kill the unbelievers with a shotgun when that day came. Now, let's address the elephant in the room. Jared was that person most of you knew in high school. You know the one. The guy who is always between jobs. He is always posting memes featuring smoking TV show characters from shows like Breaking Bad and Peaky Blinders, with quotes about loyalty and respect, sharing images of the Joker and how he protects his queen, the one who posts flat earth and anti-gravity conspiracies, with comments on how all the sheeple need to wake up. The difference here is that Jared was the extremist version of this particular brand of person. He falls into that low percentile of dipping his toe into the abyss and then falling right in. And it seems that there was a singular moment that put him over the edge, the moment that radicalized him. That event would be his arrest.
This right here, you guys, is where cops threatened to shoot and kill me. As I tried to place my hand on that railing right there, as I made an attempt to try to walk backwards naked, as I was instructed, my wife stood right there and watched them threaten to kill me. I slowly walked back as I was instructed, and they threatened to sic a dog on me. Came out here barefoot backwards. They put handcuffs on me. Then they proceeded to take me down the alley. I want to take a little walk for you here. Down the alley here. And here we have my street and my lovely neighbors that watched the cops haul me away naked. And they began to take me up the road here. As you can see, it's a bit of a ways. You got neighbors everywhere. Began to take me up to this corner here. Where, right around this corner right here, they had a car, cop car, faced the other direction, back up to me, so I could come to this point right here, by this blue thing, to where they put me in the car. Now, you might find it strange that they would park the cars facing the opposite direction. Now, is it because maybe they didn't want the cameras to see something they were doing? I'm pretty sure threatening to kill a naked, unarmed individual is something that would be frowned upon. And I'm also sure that threatening to sick dogs on an unarmed individual, naked, only thing I was wearing was my wedding ring, you guys. Wedding ring, that's it. Okay? As you can see, there's no trespassing. My wife stood here and watched this. Okay? Imagine how traumatizing that was for her. But, to make matters even worse, they entered the house. Alright, not a very big apartment, as you can tell. While an officer stood here, well, first they asked Amanda to go get them some clothes, my wife. So she came down our hallway to get me some clothes down there. And as she did so, cops entered the house. Okay? One of them came and stood right here in this hallway, right where I'm standing now, with an assault rifle. While another one illegally detained my wife there in the living room, would not let her leave the house. Police officers then came up my stairs here. Without a warrant, by the way. Came up the stairs here into the bedroom. And under the bed where the guns were. They took her revolver and her pistol. The revolver she bought the day before. The pistol, the semi-automatic Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm, was bought that very day. Now, the detectives are refusing to give her her guns back for some investigation. I don't know what they're investigating. They won't tell us. But apparently, it looks like Lafayette Police Department here in Lafayette, Indiana, are doing gun confiscations.
When April of 2014 rolled around, the Millers believed they had spotted the perfect opportunity for their long-awaited revolution to come into fruition. Not far from Las Vegas, in a little place called Bunkerville, cattle rancher Cliven Bundy and his family were being threatened by the Bureau of Land Management for allowing his family's cattle to graze on land owned by the U.S. government and had managed to rack up over $1 million in unpaid grazing fees. The 21-year-long legal dispute would begin to boil over when the Bundy clan refused to pay the bill or keep their cattle off the public land bordering the family's ranch. With the family refusing to budge on the issue, police were requested to round up the trespassing bovines. This action only seemed to escalate the situation. Several arrests were made, and it wouldn't take long before a dispute over cattle and property rights would become an armed standoff. The standoff would garner public attention when mainstream media outlets began running stories on the situation and labeling Bundy as a domestic terrorist. Right-wing and libertarian news outlets quickly adopted the story as a pet cause, with broadcasters like Alex Jones spearheading the movement. Through these outlets, Bundy was rebranded as what they called a domestic patriot and was painted as a simple cattle rancher whose family had used the land for decades, only to become the latest victims of a tyrannical government run amok. In reality, court documents do indicate that in 1993, Bundy refused to renew his permit that would allow his cattle to graze on the public land, unencumbered, and refused to do so. Some radical right-wing groups were inspired by Bundy's determinations and decided to take up arms, and many of them were relatively adult about it, wanting to join Bundy in his Bunkerville ranch for moral support and act as backup in the event that gunfire was exchanged with the police. This would later become known as the Battle of Bunkerville. What we're focusing on today is Jared and Amanda Miller. They didn't really see a complex issue here, a national debate to be had. They wanted their revolution. They wanted things to go down. And they saw this as a pet cause for them personally to kickstart this revolution. So they headed to the Bundy Ranch and brought with them their extremist views. To Jared and Amanda Miller, who had been following the Bundy standoff closely and longed for any cause that could potentially take down the looming threat of a one-world government, and to be applauded as the brave heroes they believed they were, this was their chance. And on April 9th, 2014, Jared wrote, "I will be supporting Clive Bundy and his family from the federal government slaughter. This is the next Waco. His ranch is under siege right now. The federal government is stealing his cattle, arresting his family and beating on them. We must do something. I will be doing something." Giving up their jobs and their apartment, Jared, decked out in paramilitary gear and a t-shirt supporting his favorite governor hopeful, David Laurie Vanderbeek, along with his wife Amanda, arrived on the Bundy compound days after police made the decision to halt the cattle confiscation for fear Bundy and his supporters would retaliate with violence. Immediately upon their arrival, Jared began making the Bundys and their volunteer militiamen feel uncomfortable when he suggested the armed men take a more aggressive stance towards the police officers who were surrounding the property.
Hopefully, you know, people will see that there's people out there willing to, you know, come out and support them, put their lives on the line, or just their, you know, physical bodies, you know, out there and put them in front of the tasers, be beaten, and help stand up for people, you know, because, you know, if the stuff was happening to me, I'd want people to be there for me. You know, so I can't expect that out of people if I'm not going to be willing to come out and support somebody else in their time of need.
Many of the militiamen refused to speak on camera for reporters, but Jared was eager to be in the spotlight, filmed carrying an AK-47 along with a 9mm Smith & Wesson after returning from a night of guard duty, both of which were illegally in Jared's possession on account of his felony record.
You know, they can't just go around pushing people around doing whatever they want anymore. We have the internet, we have alternative media, you know, we pick up on things faster, we can get around, we can support each other. And that's the real important thing, is we need to be backing each other up when we stand for our rights and for our liberties, because we're losing them at an alarming rate. And, you know, the people here that have come here to support Bundy, we're not afraid. You know, we know that, you know, in the past, the government has used force against civilians like Waco, Ruby Ridge. All right.
Well,
we're not
that,
afraid of that.
But this was the fear that it was going to become another situation like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but...
And so the government backed down.
Yeah. But this is an entirely different situation from Ruby Ridge and Waco. They didn't have the internet back then, you know. Clive and Bundy has been involved for over 20 years dealing with these people. This isn't something new. It's just it's escalated to this point, you know. So it's not that Clive and Bundy escalated it to this point. It's the federal government. They came down here. They started abusing protesters and stuff. Sure, they might have been getting in the way of a truck, but they were just curious about what was going on out there because it is illegal to bury cattle out in the desert, and they were breaking the law. You know, they had backhoes, dump trucks. Why do you need that stuff if you're rounding up cattle? I can understand the helicopters, you know, but as far as the heavy machinery, that was totally uncalled for. So they were just wanting to know what was going on, you know.
Does this change your strategy going forward that there has been, you know, put one in your corner and in your tally?
Well, we don't see it like that, okay? We know they're just falling back to regroup. They'll be back. This isn't over. The BLM is just right down the road. They didn't leave, you know. But with American Spring coming up, you know, a lot of their resources are in D.C. They can't send the ATF and FBI out here in full force, you know. And we know that
You don't think the federal government can mobilize at a moment's notice if they want to? Come on.
Not without people getting a little, suspicious of what they're doing. The more they bring out here, the more will come.
plain and simple. You know, this week, you know, people just can't take off work right away. You know, people complain for vacations, things like that. If they come back and, you know, there's a standoff for a couple weeks, people will make it down here. You know, a lot of people were just waiting to see what would happen. I know personally a couple people that wanted to come out here and join up, but they were afraid they might get a little trigger happy, you know, and wouldn't wait for them to fire the first shot. So they were advised to stay at home. We only need cool-headed people here that aren't going to antagonize them, you know, and pretty much make it to look like we fired the first shot or had anything involved in any of that kind of thinking. The armed people here are just here to keep the peace, you know. Certainly, you know, we did have yesterday morning like a little armed confrontation with them, but yet the sheriff was there on our side, which he should have been here, you know, day one, telling them to get out. They have no right to this land. The Constitution only allows the federal government to own land for military bases, shipyards, arsenals, capital buildings, and emergency shelters. I don't see any of that out here. So are they literally declaring?
The sheriff said he cannot supersede the federal government.
Well, that's not what the Constitution says. There's a lot of these guys, you know, that are self-set, and they're really dedicated to freedom. That's all they do is they train. They go out, you know, and they protect our borders, things like that. Minutemen are coming. And we're just going to be, they're out here. They're out here right now. You don't see them. You know, that's what they do. So, you know, I feel sorry for any federal agents that want to come in here and try to push us around or anything like that. I really don't want violence toward them, but if they're going to come bring violence to us, well, if that's the language they want to speak, we'll learn it.
The Millers lived on the compound for several days until Jared revealed that he had felony convictions. Fearing that his prior felony offenses would be grounds for federal agents to storm the ranch, or worse, that the Millers had been sent as agent provocateurs, looking to turn the standoff situation into another Ruby Ridge, a decision was reached by the Bundys that it would be best if Jared and Amanda left the ranch, giving them a little money. Because they felt bad, the Millers were sent to the nearby city of Mesquite and did not appear to have harbored any animosity towards the group for their decision. However, a comment from Jared on a YouTube video regarding the standoff tells
Get 15% off a set of Brake Mess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Different story. Quote, I was out there, but they told me and my wife to leave because I am a felon. They don't seem to understand that they are all felons now for intimidating law enforcement with deadly weapons. So, don't let them tell you that they need people. We sold everything we had to buy supplies and quit our jobs to be there 24/7. How dare you ask for help and shun us as dedicated patriots? Rejected by anti-government movements they so desperately wanted to be a part of, Jared and Amanda returned to Las Vegas to live with a former neighbor, and Jared's social media posts began reflecting his sense of alienation. The coming revolution and suicide by cop were prevalent themes in the weeks leading up to the shooting spree that would cost three innocent people their lives. On May 2, 2014, Jared once again took to Facebook. Quote, there is no greater cause to die for than liberty. To die for that cause is easy. To live for it is another matter. I will willingly die for liberty. Death, in a sense, is freedom from tyranny. Death is an easy way out. Most notably is the suicide by cop routine. Yes, standing before despots is dangerous and most likely does not end well for you. I know this. My wife knows this. Soon they will come for us because they don't like what we think and what we say. They don't like the fact that we simply will not submit to fascist rule. We don't have much. We are willing to sacrifice everything. For you, for our freedoms, even if you wouldn't let us have ours, we know who we are and what we stand for. Do you? A month later, between posts he shared, pleading for the Benghazi investigation to be reopened, and another infographic claiming police had never attacked a pro-gun rally. Jared would type out a lengthy rant that reads almost as a manifesto. Quote, "We can hope for peace. We must, however, prepare for war. We face an enemy that is not only well-funded, but who believe they fight for freedom and justice. Those of us who know the truth and dare to speak it know that the enemy we face are indeed our brothers. Even though they share the same masters we all do, they fail to recognize the chains that bind them. To stop this oppression, I fear, can only be accomplished with bloodshed. May the best men of our beloved nation stand and fight tyranny, without fear and without regret. May we stand proud as free men, instead of kneeling as slaves. May we offer our children a free and just world with our blood, sweat, and tears as payment. Let our wives and lovers take vengeance upon our enemies in our absence. We cannot fail in this endeavor of liberty. If we do, we risk leaving our orphan children to the will of tyrants. We cannot, in good conscience, leave this fight to our children, because the longer we wait, our enemies become better equipped and recruit more mercenaries of death, willing to do a tyrant's bidding without question. I know you are fearful, as am I. We certainly stand before a great and powerful enemy. I, however, would rather die fighting for freedom than live on my knees as a slave. Let it be known to our children's children that free men stood fast before tyrants' wrath and were found victorious because we stood together, that we all cast aside our petty differences and united under the banner of liberty and truth. May future generations look back upon this time in history with awe and gratitude for our courage to face tyranny so that they could live happy and free." In a final apocalyptic post dated June 7th, 2014, Jared would simply write, "The dawn of a new day. May all our coming sacrifices be worth it." The following morning, Jared and Amanda filled their bags with four handguns, a rifle, as well as some food and water. Underneath their clothing, the couple adorned matching adult diapers. They were going on a hunting trip, but they weren't hoping for a buck or even a rabbit. They were on the hunt for police officers. Leaving the apartment the couple had called home for the last time, they left in the custody of their roommate multiple documents. These documents would include detailed plans to overtake a courthouse and execute public officials, as well as white supremacist literature Jared and Amanda had been passing out to other tenants in the complex. They would spend the morning walking in the hot Nevada sun when suddenly, without a warning or provocation, Amanda and Jared entered into a CC's Pizza and shot two on-duty police officers who had just sat down to enjoy some lunch. 31-year-old Igo Soldo came to the United States from Bosnia, seeking refuge with his family during the Bosnian War. He graduated high school in Nebraska and had a big dream of becoming a police officer in Las Vegas. The opportunity would present itself in 2006, and he served the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department until his untimely death on June 8, 2014. Pinned to his blood-splattered uniform, a note would read, quote, "This is the beginning of the revolution." Like Igor, 41-year-old Alan Beck was a father and husband. He had moved to Las Vegas from Wyoming and had joined the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Force in 2001. He had recently been promoted to sergeant. Jared and Amanda draped a Gosden flag on top of the fallen officer, along with a swastika. The yellow Gosden flag depicted a coiled snake, accompanied by the caption, "Don't tread on me."
My partner and I, it was a Sunday, I remember. My partner and I were already in the homicide office conducting follow-up on an unrelated case when we heard the radio broadcast over the Northeast Channel reference the shooting of two police officers at a restaurant and the subsequent officer-involved shooting at a Walmart near the restaurant.
Stealing the officer's service weapons and extra magazine clips, the couple fled the restaurant and made their way across the street to Walmart,
My partner and I learned that two officers, Officers Beck and Soldo, had been shot at the CC's Pizza while they were eating lunch. And the suspects in that incident had walked to the Walmart. That would be the Millers there. And right around the first time that we get a chance to see them on video, we'll see them walk southeast from the CC's Pizza crime scene via a camera affixed to the rear of the Walmart store, which faced kind of in a northeast direction. We'll see Jared still walking ahead of Amanda, and then they'll come around that northeast corner of the store where they proceeded to walk southbound along the store all the way to the entrance. The two will enter the store in the same order. Jared Miller goes in first. Jared comes in. He initially starts yelling loudly about a revolution which has started.
31-year-old Joseph Wilcox was a good guy with a gun. Joseph, who had been at Walmart shopping that day, heard Jared scream out, "This is a revolution!" followed by the sound of gunfire as Jared shot into the air, signaling for customers to leave the store. Reacting to the situation, Joseph attempted to take down the shooter using his own concealed carry weapon, only he didn't realize that Amanda had been firing in tandem with her husband. Joseph was shot dead where he stood, in front of a checkout aisle.
It's at about this point here that Jared Miller fires a warning shot into the ceiling. This draws Mr. Wilcox's attention, and he remains focused on Jared as Jared continues to go further into the store. I believe the separation between Amanda and Jared has caused Joseph Wilcox to not believe that Amanda Miller is with Jared, and she goes unnoticed by him. She quickly turns and fires one shot from her Smith & Wesson 9mm handgun, and the gunshot is immediately incapacitating, and Mr. Wilcox goes down in the aisle.
444, officers down, officers down.
At this point in the store, just to give you a little context, they've only been in the Walmart at this point approximately 30 seconds, and officers are just now beginning to arrive at the CC's Pizza crime scene. This location here, this had the glass ammunition cabinet, which was had the ammunition stored for the Walmart store. And then he obtains a baseball bat from a nearby aisle, which he uses to break the glass on the ammunition cabinet. Jared Miller sorts through the ammunition, and then when he finds the appropriate ammunition, he takes that ammunition. When Officer Brosnahan gets approximately four rows down, Amanda Miller, still armed with her Smith & Wesson handgun, raises it toward Officer Brosnahan, and the two exchange gunfire.
Making their way to the sporting goods department, Jared grabbed a bat and headed toward the glass case containing ammunition. Jared smashed open the case and shoved as much ammo as he could into his bag while officers began closing in, exchanging fire between aisles. Jared yelled to the police, "Back off! I'm in charge now!"
Jared Miller rounds the corner, drops his duffel bag, and then he also begins to engage Officer Brosnahan with gunfire.
And at some point in that exchange of fire, was Amanda Miller hit?
Yes, Amanda Miller received a gunshot wound to the upper right back.
Officers and the Millers continued to exchange gunfire, hitting Amanda in the back as the couple jetted towards the automotive department. Realizing they were cornered, Jared attempted to shield Amanda, the love of his life, from officer fire.
Sergeant McKenzie requests the next arriving units or any arriving units to take over the video surveillance room at the Walmart so that they can locate the suspects on camera and that they can find out what they're doing in the northwest corner of the store. When the cameras switched over and the officers in the surveillance room were able to update the containment team officers, the first images we're able to see in that far northwest aisle depict Amanda Miller. She's lying down in a semi-prone position. She's armed with a handgun still, and she has that handgun trained directly south toward Officer Corbin and Officer Bethard. Jared is lying in a semi-prone position, and then he ultimately gets up from his position and walks south toward that backpack. There's a backpack, sorry, that was further south of Amanda's location. When he gets up to walk, it's clear that he's changed clothes since his encounter with Officer Brosnahan. He's now wearing a black tactical vest, which has a rifle scabbard attached to the back. And on the ground adjacent to his position, you can see a pump shotgun. Jared Miller grabs that backpack and then moves back to Amanda. He takes out a bottle of water for her and he gives her some water before returning to his shooting position at the end of the aisle, where he gets in the prone position and then aims his gun east toward Officer Gross and Officer Beal. Jared Miller gets up from his position and he gets up and he pulls that shopping cart out of the way and to the far northwest corner of the store. At that point, he attempts to get an item off of the shelf. He keeps his right arm extended and the handgun pointed toward Officer Gross and Officer Beal's position. However, he's focused on getting the item off the shelf on the north wall. Jared Miller notices Officer Beal and quickly fires one shot toward Officer Beal. Officer Beal quickly fires one shot back toward Jared Miller, and then Officer Beal returns to his position of cover so fast that he's not able to see where his shot landed. And at this point is the first time they appear to have any communication with one another. She manipulates her handgun several times to point toward Jared, then back toward herself, and then she appears to be trying to manipulate it and change her own grip on the gun, the way she's holding it, and then ultimately she shoots herself in the right side of the head.
Creating a barricade of shelves and inventory around themselves, Amanda began shooting at her husband. After firing several rounds at Jared, Amanda then took the gun, pressed it to her right temple, and pulled the trigger. Body withered in a pool of blood and motor oil, in spite of being shot at several times by Amanda, none of the bullets would see a direct hit. Jared Miller, before he died, realized that Amanda had turned on him, tried to take him out, and it would be the approaching officers who would deliver the fatal bullet to Jared Miller.
So Amanda ultimately shot herself in the head, is that correct?
Correct.
And what happened after that?
After that, we have numerous other officers arrive on the scene. They go into the store and they assist in containing the suspects in the far northwest corner of the store, and they also assist with evacuating numerous citizens who were sheltered in place. And ultimately, a SWAT crisis entry team makes entry and takes both Amanda and Jared into custody in that far northwest corner, ending the incident.
And how long was this entire incident, roughly?
The incident in Walmart lasted approximately 24 minutes.
In the end, listener, Jared and Amanda Miller would not be remembered as brave revolutionaries or as political martyrs. Instead, Vanderbeek, the couple's whole reason for moving to Vegas, acknowledged that he had met the Millers along his campaign trail and immediately attempted to distance himself from the ambush, writing on his blog, "I will never know their reasons. They were not political killers. They were simply insane people who wanted to kill." The Bundys, too, turned on the Millers. I mean, they turned the couple away during the Battle of Bunkerville. They also went on record explaining that Jared's obsession with violence was even too much for them. And not unlike a snake eating its own tail, Jared and Amanda Miller would make the fake news cycle. Only, the stories were probably not what the couple envisioned. Quote, "How did unemployed felon Jared Miller buy expensive firearms and ammo?" would be one of the several stories that were written to imply that the whole shooting spree had been staged as a false flag operation in order to weaken the Patriot movement. Everyone the Millers had believed in turned their backs on them to do what they do best, sell headlines.
We are talking to the former girlfriend of the man who was involved, according to cops, in executing two cops and then went across the street to Walmart where another man died who was trying to defend him and the people around him. Layla Sherman, thank you for having the courage to talk to us about this exclusively tonight. Your insights into how he became the person he was. How long ago did you date him? And at the time, was he obsessed with creating a new world order, being a freedom fighter? Was he spouting conspiracy theories and raving with white power anti-government rhetoric?
When him and I dated, it would have been between 2006 and 2007. Back then, yes, he had his views on the government, and but he had never given any insight into ever doing something like this.
So you were shocked that he became this crazy, as it were?
Well, I would rather use the word unhinged, but yes, I believe that something must have sparked this to make him want to do something like this.